Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Infinite Tennis. Yeah, we're your friends here on the radio. And one of the things that I think is very, I love irony. We love irony on Infinite Tennis. So one of the really cool, ironic things is that you have people and they grew up on a plant, on a island for prisoners. And then they're like the happiest people you've ever met. And then you meet them and you get to know them and they're incredibly mean to you, but then you laugh and you smile because they're so mean and they're very personal, jibing humor. Oh my goodness, it's unbelievable. So today on the show we have an Australian, you know, and it's going to be awesome. We have Emma Doyle and she's going to be on the show. We're going to talk about friendship and fun and coaching philosophy and personalities and all sorts of crazy stuff. So I think this is going to be a wild one. So get ready. Hello, Emma. Are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. So what's it like to be away from the prison island?
Well, actually, my parents were 10-pound ponds on the boat out to Australia, and now that I'm on the other side of the world, it feels fantastic. I'm in I'm in beautiful California, and just getting over my jet lag. The 24-hour trip is quite something.
Oh, well, yeah, definitely. You know, I have a trick. Here's a trick for jet lag that I came up with, and it entails 3 days before, eating on the new schedule that you're going to be arriving at. So have breakfast.
I like it.
Yeah, and then the other thing is make yourself incredibly tired. Stay up for 36 hours. And then that kind of, for me, that helps me reset my sleep clock. I actually left Japan on a Sunday and went to work Monday morning at 8 o'clock and just killed it. Just was awesome. So anyway, okay. So, Emma, tell us a little bit about you and growing up and learning how to play tennis.
Yeah, look, I grew up in Melbourne, Australia, and, you know, my first racket was a wooden Patcash Junior racket, which actually my dad actually shaved off the handle of the racket. So I think he was actually ahead of his time, realizing that that I couldn't handle the long lever. And I remember, you know, just playing against the wall for hours and pretending I was Yvonne Goolagong Cawley. It was one of my earliest memories. So, yeah, look, and after that, one of my biggest idols, I think, was Steffi Graf. She, I certainly wanted to have a game just like hers. I thought she was quite something. I was a ball girl at the Australian Open for 6 years. And yeah, it was absolutely beautiful. But one thing I will say about my childhood and growing up in a tennis club called Maribyrnong Park was just the quality of the people that I played with at the club and the team. We almost had this team that where a lot of the people now, I mean, Chris Hansi actually, he played for the Chicago Bulls and the Dallas Mavericks, you know, now is the head coach of the Melbourne Tigers basketball team in Australia. We had people like Joe Siriani. He was on the tour for 15 years, you know, reached an ATP of 138. And another girl, Tamara Hyatt, a pro golfer. So for me, you know, tennis is a great cross-training sport no matter what you end up playing. And of course, I've coached on the tour. So we had a great team, really quite a cool group of people who still catch up today, which is pretty awesome, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the most admirable traits about you Aussies is the camaraderie, teamwork aspect that's always there, even as you brutalize one another.
This is very true. Yep.
Yeah. No, there's nothing one of the few things I enjoy more, I don't even know what I'm saying, but I have a friend who's Australian, and he just skewers me every time we talk, and he just has me in stitches, and it's great therapy. I don't know what it is. He just kills me, and he knows what hurts, too, and he goes for it. So, anyway. So, all right. So now, but in your development as a player, who were some of the coaches? What were some of the principles that helped you to become, you know, a tour player?
I was actually a college tennis player. So, what happened? My journey was my first part-time job was actually tennis coaching when I was 14, and I remember back then. I mean, I just remember thinking, wow, I seem to be quite good at this job, and I really love it. And I certainly wasn't necessarily winning Australian national championships. And so I early on, I thought, I really want to be a coach. And so my first year at university in Australia, I met one of Australia's famous Australian rules football coaches, David Park, and he won 4 premierships for the numerous AFL teams. And he said to me in that first year, he said, Emma, he said, you need to make sure, for you to be the best coach that you can be, that have you really played as hard as you can? Have you really taken your tennis as far as you can? And the next thing that I found myself in a place called Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I mean, oh, my God, what a culture shock that was for me. and it was the best advice that he gave me. College tennis for me, wow. I mean, again, reinforcing what a real team means and how to fight out a match. There's nothing like college tennis to prepare you for that.
Yeah.
I think that's why.
So do you know about some of those towns in Tennessee where I've heard that there's towns in Tennessee where the police won't even go because it's entirely populated by criminals? Do you know about that?
Well, look, I heard such things when I was there, and I guess one of my I've grown up in a fairly large family, so I'm fairly street smart. And my parents said to me, Emma, do not ring home unless you need money or you're in trouble. Girl, you just go out there and you just make it on your own. So when you're halfway set around the other side of the world and you never traveled before, I mean, a lot of tennis players travel a lot younger these days, but certainly for me, college provided that excellent platform to be able to take my tennis as far as I could, and put me in great stead to be a great coach.
Yeah, that's great. So what school was that you were playing for?
MTSU, Middle Tennessee State University.
Oh, cool.
In
that's so cool.
Murfreesboro. Yeah.
All right. So now, and then... So that's interesting. I mean, not a lot of people go that route. And, you know, I feel similar because I always felt like I had a better eye for the game than I was necessarily having the best opportunity to play myself. I didn't really receive coaching, but always felt like I was preparing that way. So then after college, so then you just jumped right into coaching immediately?
Absolutely. I think even when I was playing college, I still knew that coaching was my bag. And some of my influences after that, I certainly was even influenced by a guy called Damien Carmody Stevens, who was the national kendo coach, which is actually Japanese sword fighting. And he really, you know, I guess coming from a martial arts background, he just taught me to love the battle of competition and to instill that in my players. And also the really respect, you know, I love it. I teach my players now. I really invite your opponent to play their best tennis. You know, rather than looking at that second serve and saying, oh, please double fault, I really need this break point. You know, it's kind of like you want to ask them, come on, give me your best serve. What do you got? Knowing that you can hit it back even better. And he certainly influenced me a lot through those martial arts philosophies, which I love. And the other person, I guess, that I'll mention straight after to college, when I got back to Australia, I thought to myself, you know, I need to really be exposed to the best coaches in the world. And at the time, the best coaches in the world were in Florida. So I remember ringing like Saddle Brook and Boletari's every day and just trying to get a job. And no one called me back for like 4 months. So I just got on a plane. This is very typical Emma Doyle, maybe even Australian style. And I rocked up and I said, I'm the girl that called you every day for, like, you know, 4 weeks. And he goes, and I said, look, I'll work for free, food and accommodation, if you can provide that for 1 week. And if after 1 week you don't think I'm any good, then send me back on my way and I'll be off. And I think that was the best thing that I did, was just rocking up and saying, you know, I need to create my own opportunities. And that's pretty much, you know, I guess something that I've done throughout my journey. But during those early days, I mean, you know, spending time with Nick Bollettieri and even a guy named Peter McCraw was there at the time. He was an Aussie guy who did a lot of Sharapova's development work, and hanging out on court and seeing those players at a young age put me in great stead to go back and represent Australia numerous times in Junior Fed Cup and Junior World Championships, you know, by exposing myself to as many great coaches as I could back in those early days.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, did you say that you roughed up? You roughed up a little? What was that you said in order to gain the momentum to go let these people have it? What was that?
I can't remember.
Okay, all right, moving on. You know, we'll just cover the Australian slang just as it comes up, you know, because I don't
okay. think
that part. It's just there. So yeah, I mean, that's another kind of admirable trait, I think, that you Aussies have is that determination that when things get rough, you're going to ramp it up. There's not like a shrinking back from the competition. And I love what you said about wishing your opponent to play well, because that's when you have the opportunity to raise your game to a new height and then gain so much more satisfaction from the win when they play well.
Absolutely.
One of the saddest things I've ever seen went in my team's favor. It was championship point for a section high school championship, and second serve coming from the other team on match point. And I'm thinking, kid, don't double fault. And he did. And it was so sad, and you know, and we won the championship from that, but it really muted our celebration, and you know, made for kind of a bummer for at least a couple of minutes there. And that, you know, that's too bad. And it would have been nice for the kid to really hammer a good second serve and see my kids earn that thing on the last point. So I'm totally with you. You know.
Yeah. Can I jump in there? I mean, I guess that's one of my biggest, definitely one of my philosophies in terms of language and certainly my studies in NLP or neuro-linguistic programming around language and how to embed in subconscious what you want players to do. So, you know, the moment, as I'm sure all your listeners can relate to, the moment you say, don't double fault, you know, that subconscious just hears the word double fault. So it's got a good intention, that statement, but I think as coaches, one of our main objectives is to give players strategies so that little voice doesn't happen. So we focus on the process rather than the outcome. It's a big area of mine. You know, I hear it all the time. Coach says, you know, your swing's too big, or don't let the ball drop, or why are you hitting the ball down? You know, I think if we can embed the opposite of those things, top of the bounce, swing
right,
shoulder height, things like that, I think it's just so, so important with language is, you know, it's something that we all need to be consciously aware of so that it becomes a habit when we play our matches.
Yeah, and I would say what you want.
Correct.
Because if you're talking about what you don't want, you're going to get what you don't want.
Absolutely. Totally.
So I think I was probably insincere when in my mind, knowing that how that works, and I was thinking, hey, opponent, don't double fault, I think I really wanted him to. So so let's move on. I think that's a good jump-off place, I think, to get into game style and personalities, like we talked about. So tell us about your philosophy in regard to that.
Well, I coached on the road, on the junior and the women's senior circuits for about 8 years. And after that period, I actually got a little bit burnt out, I guess, sometimes from being on the road for that many, you know, weeks in a row and that many years, and sometimes tennis politics and things like that. And actually, for the first time in my life, I wanted to get out of tennis. So I actually, the more I studied human development and human behavior, the more it actually catapulted me back into tennis. Because actually, it wasn't like I lost the love, the deep love that I have for this fantastic sport. It was just that I needed to redefine my relationship with it. And so the first program that I developed was called ACE Corporate, so Action Communication for Excellence. And it was based around, does your personality match your game style? So I designed these four personality types, which, would you believe, next week in Memphis at the USPTA conference, I'll actually be presenting this presentation. And the four game styles, we've got the all-court player or the thinker personality. And then we have the aggressive baseliner or the director personality. And we've got the crowd pleaser, which I love presenting, and the socializer personality. That's definitely me. And the last one is the consistent player or the relator personality. So, of course, not everyone's personality matches their game style, but the important take-home message is that if, as a coach, if we can understand what the personality of the player is, then we can certainly tailor our message or, you know, certainly adapt our style to bring out the best in that player.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that, okay, I'm somewhat of a crowd pleaser, but I think I've been all four of those at one time. And
we are, definitely.
I've had to find my way to what works best for me, but I'm thinking of this kid, Joey, who was a horrible practice player, but I'd let him play for my life because I knew he'd go all out when it really mattered, right? So anyway, Joey would come to the fence before serving in a live match and say, "Coach, watch this." And then he would just hammer a first serve, and then it would be an ace, and he'd turn around and he'd say, "Did you see it?" You know, and so that might be the ultimate, because I guess you can do that in a high school match, but you can't really do that in juniors, but that could be the ultimate of crowd pleaser.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joey sounds like a crowd pleaser, no doubt about it.
Hilarious kid. Okay, so let's go into when is it good and when is it bad with the personalities and the game styles?
In what context? What do you mean?
Okay, players, well, the presumption would be that when players are playing according to a style that jives with their yeah, then it's good, and then when they don't, then it's bad, and let's flesh that out.
Mm. Mm. I think, for me, it comes back to having an awareness, just an awareness of potentially when they play their best tennis, how is their emotions and how is their personality and what do they need to do to try and replicate that as much as they can. And as a coach, I think it's our job to provide those players with strategies, really great strategies, that help them get back to their, you know, where they play their best. So, for example, if they're an all-court player, generally, you know, they're a little bit more self-contained, a little bit more indirect, and they really operate at quite a slow and a systematic pace. So, you know, if potentially they've got a little bit emotional over something, then it's really important as a coach that we help them with a strategy to then, you know, maybe it's deep breathing or maybe it's going to the back of the fence and, you know, maybe flicking a wrist on a band on their wrist just to bring them right back. And, you know, 6 seconds in, 6 seconds out breathing can actually lower your heart rate. So those types of things would maybe help the all-court player just to get back to that state so that they're ready to play that next point. And I think as coaches, it's our job. I mean, I was out at the women's 25,000 here down in San Diego, the Rancho Santa Fe tournament yesterday. And, you know, there's still a lot of things that I saw on the tour 8 years ago, you know, in terms of these girls look like they have no strategies to get back to where they need to go. You know, plenty of emotions out there on the court. So, which is nothing wrong with emotions. If you are the aggressive baseliner or the crowd pleaser, maybe you need to release the emotions, but it's having an actual strategy to then be able to prepare yourself and your body to play the best possible next point.
Yeah, you know, here's an example of something like that. And I've referenced this in previous shows, but there was a great match in the final, Agassi and Federer. It's one set apiece. Agassi's up a break and outplaying Federer. They play a 25-shot point, and Agassi wins it with a dramatic shot. Crowd goes nuts, and nobody notices Federer doing the Klingon death cry. I mean, he was livid. And then what did he do? He rattled off 21 of the next 25 games.
Wow.
Or, you know, he just went on an unreal run. It was like he won, like, you know, 23 out of the next 27 points. And it was that one outlet of rage that then he calmed down, and then he went and played fantastic. It was really a tremendous turnaround. But, you know, that's an example of something that's kind of like counterintuitive in the robotic world of sports psychology.
Yeah, definitely. But it was a strategy, obviously, in that time, in that match, that helped him. And, you know, whether he did it instinctively, you know, it sounds like it. I'm not quite sure which match you mean, but, you know, I think having an awareness of what's going to help you is definitely key to keep you on track.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so now you want to go through different styles and some of the interventions that they can use then? I mean, because we covered the all-court player, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I can just, so the aggressive baseliner, you know, some examples here might include, say, Maria Sharapova, self-contained, very direct appearances, you know, very business-like, so to speak, fast and decisive pace, and certainly prefer success and goals and leadership. So the take-home message, certainly in the program that I run, is about, okay, well, as a coach, what does that mean? So it's about getting to the point. It's about show how your ideas are compatible with their goals. It's also letting them be in charge to a point, giving them bottom-line answers and giving them a choice is certainly some of the aggressive baseline characteristics. Moving on to the crowd pleaser. As we mentioned before, very open, very direct. These are the types of players too, I think, you know, right before the match, they're the ones that are kind of hanging out with their mates, and it's okay for them to be almost in a social environment because, you know, they're very fast and spontaneous pace. They prefer flexibility and playfulness. Decisions are very spontaneous. So communicating with these players, you've got to be patient when they digress. Avoid giving them too many explanations. They're obviously usually very strong kinesthetic type learners, so they just want to do it. They just want to show you that they can already do it. And, you know, definitely give them creative tasks when you're training them with the crowd pleaser. And then finally, the relator player, where the behavioural characteristics are open and indirect. It's actually, you know, I guess they're very personal and they're very relaxed, very casual. They prefer maintaining relationships, conformity, loyalty, often very pleasant, well-liked, and decisions are very considered. So when you're communicating with these types of people, you want to spend time in establishing that rapport, develop trust, and maybe share some personal interests and stories, and show them that you really care about their opinion, but avoid giving them too much detail. Do provide plenty of assurance and support for the consistent type of player. So I guess they're just some of the few little characteristics that we go over in the program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. So how would you redirect a player like that who's hitting so many low percentage shots or not really rallying cross court like they ought to establish a point? Well, how do you redirect them?
I think with the with methods, we're talking methods and principles, really. I mean, for me, in terms of philosophy, there's 1,000 different methods that I could go about doing that. And, you know, with principles are a few. So for me, principles would be, okay, well, who's the player in front of me? All right, well, they're a consistent player. So I know that, you know, I need to potentially just show them the benefits of, you know, the percentages of rallying cross court, and maybe show them some footage, and, you know, just, as I said, build that trust and spend that time with understanding them as well, saying, all right, talk to me about patterns, talk to me about where you're at, with how you want to set up your points, and really use that communication style with that type of person to potentially show them some of the benefits of rallying cross court.
Yeah. You know, one thing that keeps coming up on the show here is how the great coach is really to engage and listen.
Yes.
Yeah. But that doesn't keep me from talking way too much on my show.
You're allowed. You run it, so you're allowed.
I'm trying to scale back a little bit. All right, now, so I get your idea there, and then we were talking about, you know, in the before we got started here, about how personalities can change. People can mindfully change from one thing to another, or they can change game style. And what I generally tell people is, you know, your best way to win is to overpower your opponent, but that's great unless they're overpowering you. Then the next one is to put pressure on them in their positioning. But, of course, any strategy that you're going to use, if the other player does it better than you, then you need to switch to another one, right? Then you can pressure them by taking time away from them. Then you can disrupt their rhythm by hitting no two balls the same. And lastly, and I really hate this one, you can just retrieve and hit one more ball back and just make it really brutally difficult for them to win a point. But that's a hard way to make a living. So, you know, so I'm a big fan of, yeah, you have your A game that's in your comfort zone, but you need from these other four, you need one or two that you can shift to. It might not be in your comfort zone, but you can still do it when you need to. Thoughts on that?
Yeah. Yep. I certainly, you know, we have a pretty simple, you know, down under where, you know, we have to keep things quite simple, as you know. So we just go with A, B, C. So what's your aggressive plan? B, what's your backup plan? And C, you compete. You stay out on the court as long as you can. As you say, it is the retrieving way, but when your chips are up against the wall, you stay out on the court. You find a way to stay out there as long as you can. And I love that the famous quote, Jim Courier, he said that, you know, he's never ever lost a tennis match in his life. He's only ever run out of time to solve the problem. which I love that little one there, but you know, I think for me it's simple in terms of, you know, going through their game style, and then which can change. Definitely agree with that. That can certainly change over the years. Certainly depending on where you're at and what type of game people you're surrounded with, and you know, college tennis versus going pro. And then looking at, you know, at least two, we go no more than two tactics under each of those letters, A, B, C.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that because you don't want to muddy it up, you know, too much. But I think probably it'd be advisable to go no more than three. Sometimes it's good to have a little bit of variety where you can go, all right, this time I'm going to play this kind of point, and then I'm going to play that kind of point. And then, oh, this one's really working a lot. I'm going to stay on that. Until they start to figure that out a little bit, then I'll go to my B or C kind of point that I want to play. So now, here's a match that was, I think, forgettable to a lot of people, but I loved it. It was Jennifer Capriati versus Megan Shaughnessy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Capriati was a banger since she was born, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She probably slugged her dad as soon as she was born. But Megan Shaughnessy had been the consistent player her whole career. And then Shaughnessy's working on becoming the aggressive player, and her ranking's going up, and she's having a great summer, and she plays Capriati, and they just slug it out for 2.5 full sets. It gets to 3-all in the third, and Shaughnessy kind of shrinks back to that consistent game, and it was over in about 5 minutes from there.
Mm.
I was looking all the world like it was going to be tiebreaker in the third. So now that's just a snippet. So what do you tell people who are wanting to make that change into a different way of playing and then to change their personality along the way? How do you do that?
Oh, that's probably a little bit longer than a 5-minute answer, but I think
you can do it.
Look, at the end of the day, it's an interesting point that you raised, because if you are going to go down that path of really changing your game style, one of the deep philosophical questions I quite often ask my players and my coaches is, who do you need to become to get to where you need to go? Now,
yes.
That to me is that's the essence, because you can change the outside, but if the inside is not heading north, you know, if all the compass isn't aligned in the same direction, then
yeah.
Your story, it's a great story, because under pressure, you will always revert back to naturally who you are. So to make real change, to make great change in terms of what you want, I think you've really got to start from the inside out, which is certainly one of my philosophies as a coach. And looking at the person first is absolutely key to, you know, what you want them and to perform on the court and what they want to perform on the court, more importantly.
You know what? You just did it in 90 seconds, and you didn't think you could do it in 5 minutes. Look at you. You're better than you know. All right. So now, let's talk about life coaching, because, you know, it's funny. I mean, I can totally relate to what you're talking about, because I just went through an exercise with my life coach, and I am also life coaching myself, of examining my values. And so I have right above my desk right now, I'm looking at my 5 core values. And so that's that's my north. That's
mm-hmm.
my north. And so now all my ambitions and my goals point to my north, whereas before I never had that.
Mm.
And now my goals don't scare me.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the kind of the life coaching, and how does that fit in with your tennis coaching, and
definitely.
How does your tennis coaching supplement your life coaching?
Yep. Well, the two work hand in hand. I mean, for me, sport is teaches you so much about life. That's, you know, I love it for so many different reasons, especially for kids. And I think one of the things that I've designed is the ACE Life Enhancement Program, which is a weekly type program that a lot of my players use. A couple of girls on the tour use it. And it gives them one life skill and one mental tennis skill to focus on each week. So they're accountable to almost a weekly email. And it started last week, and it goes for 47 weeks. And it's a fantastic program in terms of, you know, just really keeping them on track. And I think that's probably the best way I use it. I combine tennis with the life coaching skills. And sure enough, it's funny that you just said what you said, because this week's theme, because every Monday, of course, the new themes are emailed out, is values. So we cover values in week 2. And for me, values, they're everything. They, you know, they certainly guide your beliefs and you know, your attitudes that equal your results and your behavior and ultimately form your character. So I'm equally got mine as well. I've got mine on the back of my diary right here. So you know, that I'm holding myself accountable to, you know, to my highest value, which is courage. And I know that by me living that and also getting my players to live that, some of the results that we've had, especially even a girl last year who was riddled with injury that, you know, on the tour, and by her having this weekly program, kept her on task, and now she's just had an operation and she's going to be back playing. So, which is just fantastic news that she's almost had all this grounding in mental skills that will put her on task and on track for hopefully having a great 2014. So I still think you can do a lot of work even if you've got injury or you've got something in your personal life that you need to work on. The two affect each other. So I think it is important to have a focus and a direction. So,
yeah. No, that's terrific. Thank you. So You know, I like free stuff, and I got this free ebook that I love, and I would highly recommend it. It's called Five Secrets of Goal Setting, even though I don't like the word secrets because nothing's really a secret. But the secret's out. Five Secrets of Goal Setting. And one of the exercises that was so pivotal for me in that was it gives like 100-plus words to choose from to value. I value this word, you know. And for me, one was mindfulness. And so then, you know, you select these words, and it helps you to go, wow, look at all the words I'm rejecting. You know, I picked these, and I rejected those, and now I see the difference between what I want, what I don't want. And I think that's also powerful because then you get more definite, you know. And so then you've limited yourself to what you're really, truly focused on. There's a great quote I heard recently that discipline is remembering what you want.
Yeah. Yep.
So now, where do we go from here? What's the next thing we're going to talk about? Because we can go on the life coaching thing. But you know, I know we were going to talk about how you make tennis. You know, you talk about tennis in terms of a whole life and not just the sports part. We have about 8 minutes left. Well, why don't you flesh that part out?
Just quickly, I think everyone loves to talk about it, and that's, you know, one of the things that I created when I first came off the road was a business called Doubles for Singles and Doubles for Couples. So, you know, we did, it was kind of speed dating on the tennis court, and it was all based on language. And it was a lot of fun. And I just want to highlight, you know, that tennis, it really can be a sport that connects people. And for me, that's, you know, certainly one of my passions is connecting people. And I actually got one marriage out of that. So, you know, that's quite a funny story. But, you know, I guess if I could finish talking about something, it would be, I'd like, you know, just briefly touch on why I'm even here.
Do you want to talk about that, or do you want to talk about the marriage story? Because that sounds fun. Whatever you want.
It does sound like fun, but for me, you know, the passion is still in developing people, and you know, the doubles for singles. I mean, really, I only started running it because I needed to find my best mate a husband. I found someone else a husband in the process. But look, you know, I just want to, I guess, probably, you know, talk on, you know, why I'm here and what I'm doing here and some of the things that I'm presenting on. So the USPTA is, you know, obviously, as we mentioned, does your personality match your game style. And then also the second presentation is on tennis NLP activities for green ball players, which I think is really important that coaches learn different ways to tap into the learning preferences of the children. So we're going over visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and auditory digital drills for children in this age group. And really we're focusing so much on the opponent. I think that's really important at that green ball level to prepare them for yellow ball. And that's, you know, about reading my opponent, reading cues in them in between points as much as actually during points. So that's going to be a really fun presentation. I'm really looking forward to that. And then finally heading to South Carolina, where I'll be presenting on really fun red ball activities. So here we're going to play like Happy Halloween. We play the Christmas tree game. And you know, they have these fun names, but they have serious technical and tactical outcomes that all have one of my biggest philosophies, which is the CPR method. You know, you've got to have every activity, you've got to have that cognitive decision making. It's got to be really, really fun and engaging and interesting and challenging. And the P stands for practice. And that is, you know, the kids have got to be hitting more balls than the coach. So that's going to be fun. And then finally finishing with coaching philosophy, which, you know, I think it really is probably the best way to wrap up, you know, our time together here this morning. And that's, you know, the reason why I get out of bed in the morning, it's the reason I coach. And having a strong philosophy just really can point you in the right direction so you know what you're doing and why you're doing it. And I think having a why behind why you do things and the purpose behind every activity is something that I really encourage, you know, your listeners to discuss with their coaches and discuss with their parents. And yeah, I just thought that's probably, you know, this is the reason why I'm here.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, it's funny, when you were talking about the CPR thing, I had a funny moment with a 9-year-old last week, and we were rallying, and he missed a shot, and then I got him to the net, and I said, "Do you know why you missed that?" And he said, "Why?" And I said, no, I'm asking you."
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I'm sorry, my spoon is over there in my tennis bag. I don't have a spoon here to feed you with, you know. So
why
miss that? Reflect for a moment on what just happened there. And you can see the gears turning and the smoke coming out of the ears. But I want to say I think that's really magic that you're doing that to draw the kids out and have them challenged to think.
Correct.
You know, that's so huge. I mean, because I think I see a lot of players out there on the pro tour who are not thinkers, and it's amazing how much better they could be on the court if they had a clue as to what they're doing out there.
Yeah.
I've seen so many brainless matches on the pro tour. It's really kind of amazing.
And for me, you know, there's two things that happen. That ball comes towards you, you make a decision, and then you execute the shot. I mean, it's not execute the shot and then think. It has to come the other way around. So, you know, which is definitely in line with my coaching style, which is, you know, which is how do I get the kids to learn? It's teaching by, all right, how are they going to learn? So how do I set up an environment that actually lets the players explore the answers? And so that they're convinced, and under pressure, for me, this is what stands up. When the kids have actually explored the answer, they understand what they're doing, you know, when it is 30-40, 5-all in the third, and they've got to make that second serve to go up, you know, to stop from going down 6-5, I should say, you know, that they have that ability to be able to know what they need to do.
Yes. And you know what? That's a wrap right there. That's awesome. Hey, Emma, you are awesome. And I can't wait until you're out here presenting where I am so that I can see your presentation. Can you give some people your contact info so that if they want to reach out to you and bring you to their place, they can reach you and or ask you follow-up questions?
Sure. It's emma@emmadoyle.com.au. So the website is just emmadoyle.com.au. Pretty easy, just my name, D-O-Y-L-E. And us Aussies, we aren't that mean after all, are we?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much probably the men and the women, you know. Very personal attacks on your personality and with a laugh. And like Roy Emerson was out here and he was telling some funny stories at our recent convention. And, you know, he was just kind of, he had some really funny Rod Laver stories, and, you know, you can tell that those two have been bantering back and forth forever. But, you know, laugh when they get to hear some trash from, you know, from two mates. So I got my picture taken with Roy, and I mentioned to him that I'm probably the better looking of the two, and he didn't disagree. It was a beautiful moment.
Well, I look forward to meeting you. Thank you so much for having me on the show, and I hope your listeners got something out of that.
All right. No, you're not mean people. You have a funny way of showing. But, excellent. Thank you so much, and have a great day, and enjoy your trip to the States here, and hopefully we will connect again sometime soon.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Take care. And... what a dynamo. Emma Doyle, emma@emmadoyle.com. So get her to come to your place. Sure. And then here we go.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.